So something happens in 98, there's a kind of breakthrough. I kind of come up with this thing called Analog Baroque, which is also the name of my record label through Cherry Red in Britain. It's kind of influenced by all these trips to Japan I've been making. I've been noticing things like Dekura-chan, which is the girl fashion of the time, and it's lots of layers and frills and petticoats and lace. It's kind of like a more colourful Marie Antoinette. Certainly, also it's the architectural style of love hotels and things. And this is kind of meshed in with the analog synths and the kind of incredibly strange music thing, which is really, as far as I'm concerned, where the interesting part of the loungecore movement is going at that point. Just the idea of playing Oasis with a kind of 1950s orchestral backing is no longer very stimulating. But the idea of all these guys like Dick Hyman and Walter Carlos experimenting with analog synthesizers is kind of fascinating, because it's midway between art and science. It's often midway between Europe and America, in the sense that it's Americans making their versions of European classical music. It's midway between the past and the future, in the sense that it's retrofuturistic. It's a past impression of what the future would sound like. And in the case of Wendy Carlos, it's midway between genders as well. And there are all these things which draw me to that. That becomes the crux of my work. So I make this little Red Songbook album, which is full of dirty little comments that you might make to somebody in email just to make them laugh. And the song itself takes on the structure of the thought. It doesn't actually have any repetitions. It doesn't have verse, chorus, verse. It's sort of modeled on Marshall's epigrams, or, you know, the rather dirty poetry of Catullus, perhaps a little bit of Lucian as well. So I make this album, Little Red Songbook, and it goes out there and it wears a Baroque wig, and it's powdering its wig and being a rather mannered 18th century man of letters. And unfortunately, it sprays some perfume, or it sort of squirts some snuff in the wrong direction, and this lands on Wendy Carlos herself, and she takes umbrage and sues the character Momus rather than perhaps me personally for $22 million. This 50-page legal document is handed to me by Wendy and her baseball-capped assistant as I leave one of my concerts at Fez, and me and Matt Jacobson are personally named, as is BMG. And it's very expensive to defend, although we have quite a cheap out-of-court settlement. Nevertheless, we have to pay huge amounts of legal fees. And in fact, it comes down to me to pay these legal fees because, that's how the contracts are written. I don't have a contract with anybody saying that it's their responsibility. So I have to come up with a way to make $30,000 quickly. And this becomes the next album. This becomes Stars Forever. I decide that writing song portraits for patrons, essentially, clients. I kind of continue the theme of Little Red Songbook and continue the style of Little Red Songbook in order to pay for the excesses of Little Red Songbook's rather vicious wit. Stars Forever is born of necessity, but becomes, I think, a very successful record. It gets a lot of press interest because of just the factor of the story being so bizarre and so kind of the genesis being so interesting in itself. And it also brings out in me a kind of almost a paternal instinct of protection and affection for the people I'm writing about. So it actually absolves me of the responsibility of, you know, mask making. That's usually part of the Momus job description, is making these masks for various characters that I can play. But of course, there are limitations to the characters that I can play. I'd already had the dramatist personae extended by Japanese women, but there's also a limited range of, you know, what a Japanese woman can do. I mean, I'd had Kehime Kari, who's this rather mousy, pretty tiny girl, demolishing houses and fighting with King Kong and stuff, but there was a limit to, you know, how far I could extend her sort of Lolita appeal. So Stars Forever was the ultimate escape from the cul-de-sacs, the kind of dead ends of my writing, and it became, I think, the most diverse and affectionate of Momus records. I moved to New York City in early 2000, and that's when I began noticing that there was this kind of weird folk thing going on in New York City. There were a whole bunch of people who were making money during the day with web design and working in fashion, working in the media. But at night they would have bands, or they would have performances in art galleries like Gavin Brown's Enterprise up in the Meatpacking District, or in some Williamsburg loft party or whatever. And it would be what Steve Lafreniere from Index Magazine described as felt costumes in the basement time. People would, you know, run up these kind of absurd costumes, a bit like the Moldy Peaches or whatever, you know. And there would be this kind of totally uncommercial, totally crazy, and much more art world related than music business related music scene going on. I also began really kind of working with the idea of all sorts of things which I was calling stuff like info deco, for instance, the idea that decoration and information needn't necessarily be enemies, that digital culture could actually bring back a kind of craftsmanship, because everybody was getting back to, you know, being a little independent entrepreneur in his or her cottage. The computer was a way for people to set up a little stall with the internet and sell, you know, what were basically the digital equivalent of beadwork and pottery and basketwork and weaving. So we could go back to some kind of folk art. So this was the genesis of Folktronic, which became my 2001 album. In between making Stars Forever and Folktronic, I was also like presenting this cabaret show called Electronics in the 18th Century. I also had an art show in a Chelsea art gallery. So by 2001, I'm kind of trying to spend half the time in Tokyo and half the time in New York, juggling visas. I've started my own label now, which is called American Patchwork. I've signed groups who are making the kind of records that I previously would have attempted myself, like Super Magical Brothers is a project I actually considered doing myself, and then met these guys on tour, Adam and John, almost like a publisher commissioning authors. I kind of thought, well, these guys would actually do that project I had, the idea of making Madrigals with Nintendo Game Boy sounds. They do it a lot better than I could. So Shake Station is the result of that. This is one of the new releases on my American Patchwork label. The other one is The Gongs, a group I discovered at Oberlin College, Ohio, making the kind of experimental folk music that would have been the logical conclusion of Folktronic if I'd been just a bit more serious about really following that folk direction in a more avant-garde way towards Harry Parch, towards the Incredible String Band, and towards John Cage.